Well, what's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to this episode of The Formula. It's me, your host, Trevor Carlson, here to share with you my experiences, experiments, and conversations around designing a fulfilling life in whatever form that means for you. This week, I have the opportunity to sit down with my friend, and I think I'm going to refer to as a modern-day Renaissance woman of many talents, Kaylee Williams. Kaylee and I sit down and we have a really interesting conversation about her beginnings at Volunteer Local, where she started as an intern and made her way to eventually become president of the company. Now, she also shares some of her hobbies and experiences outside of work, and I think it's just a really good conversation with a lot of awesome takeaways that hopefully you can apply to your own life. So without me going on and on anymore in this introduction, let's hear a word about our sponsors and get the show started with Kaylee. The first sponsor for this episode is Lady Boss. Lady Boss is a women's fitness and health company that really tries to provide as many resources as possible to help women live the healthiest lives possible. So if you want to check out some of their free resources, you can head on over to theformulapodcast.com's sponsored products page and click the link there to head to their website and see what types of different free guides and workout plans, stuff like that, they have available for you. Now, our second sponsor for this episode is Liquid Web. If you've listened to any of our episodes about, you know, launching your own e-commerce company or an online business, they have these like pre-made solutions for you that you can just go on over and sign up for. Now, if you check the show notes, they provided Formula Podcast listeners with a little bit of a coupon code. So you can just check out the show notes. I believe it's Formula 33. You get 33% off all Liquid Web products. So big shout out to them for hooking us up. Now, let's get on with the show. Thanks so much for taking the time to sit down and chat with me today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. I feel like from our conversation we had last year, when was that? Like October?
Gosh, yeah. It was a while ago now.
And yeah, and then just, you know, staying in touch since you started traveling a bit. Was it this winter? Man, I have like no concept of time at all.
No, that's okay. I traveled in March. Oh, okay. And then I came again in June.
How was your travel experience while you were out and about?
Oh, gosh. It was incredible, unexpected, challenging, adventurous, fun. It was everything that I could have hoped it would be.
Do you have any highlights or like one or two takeaways that you want to share with us?
Sure. Well, I started the trip with my family. So the original idea for this trip and what started the whole thing was a family vacation with myself and my two siblings. And then not long after that, their, you know, respective husband and wife bought a ticket as well. So we all ended up doing a week together in London. And my favorite moment from our time together in London was we went to the Globe Theater, which is where all of Shakespeare's plays were originally produced and performed. And we just went to go look at the Globe Theater. But when we got there, we found that there was a show that was about to start in like 10 minutes. And we just, on the off chance, were like, hey, could we buy a ticket? And they had tickets available and they were only £5 to get in and stand. So we actually got to go see a show at the Globe Theater, and it was a nighttime show. So as they're performing on stage, the sun is going down and the lights are coming up in the theater and it's open to the sky. There's birds flying overhead and you can hear the wind. It was incredible.
Oh, that's awesome. I forgot that the Globe Theater is in London, and that had been a crazy experience. What show was it?
It was Romeo and Juliet, but it's not the original text that Shakespeare wrote. They kind of modernize it and they make it fun. There was dancing. Their costumes were all 80s outfits. It was really very fun to watch. Very engaging.
Oh, that's awesome. It sounds like a good experience. So, and then any takeaways, like what do you think that you learned from this? I mean, you weren't just out for that week. You were out for what, like a month or two, right?
Yeah, I was out for a whole month. And it was after that first week with my family, we parted ways. They went west back home and I actually went east to Holland. And then from there, I went to Zurich, Switzerland, and then to Frankfurt, Germany. And then I came back home to Seattle for work for a conference. And then I flew back to Des Moines. Gosh, I can think of a lot of things that I would share with other people about traveling. But maybe the best piece of advice is something that you told me, which is just to stay open to new opportunities and experiences as they come up. Like when you introduced me to your friends to play that volleyball game, I was really nervous about it, but meeting them and hanging out with them in The Hague was honestly one of my favorite experiences of being abroad.
Yeah. And those are some of my favorite human beings I've met while traveling. I just spent about 2 weeks with them. So they said that you were a very skilled volleyball player.
Well, that's very, very kind and generous of them. I don't think so.
They didn't tell me much about what happened, but they were just like, they said that you guys all played well together and had a good time.
We did. We had a great time. And we actually won. We went ahead to like the next round of the tournament. So, and we were the only team without uniforms. I don't know if they told you that,
no. But
we were pretty ragtag, Trevor.
I expect nothing less from that group of people. You guys all played well together and had a good time. Yeah, you spent a lot of time with them. And thank you for crediting me with that advice as well. So much random crazy stuff can happen when you just are like, well, okay. Like, I mean, a lot of these things you probably wouldn't do if you're at home, but when you're out in a new country and stuff and these things come up, it's really going with the flow a bit and trying not to be like, oh no, I would never do that. It's just like, well, let's give it a shot.
Definitely.
Because I'm sure you probably have opportunities to play volleyball a lot back in the US, right?
Yeah, actually tonight I have a group of girls getting together to play some volleyball.
Oh man.
But you know, I think it's really easy when you're abroad, and maybe you've experienced this too, but it's really, really easy to hang out in your Airbnb or in your hostel and not like force yourself to go out and meet people or do things. And I think it's really a wasted opportunity. So like making yourself get up in the morning and having an agenda of stuff that you want to go see and do was really important for me to make sure that I was making the most of my experience.
Yeah. And you were working the entire time too, right?
I was. Yeah. I was working 40 hours a week, and then I would close my laptop at 5 o'clock and I would go out and check out the scenes and live my life. And I found co-works that I could work at. So I got to meet other companies and other people. And I even went to a networking event at one of the co-works that I went to on the last night that I was there in The Hague.
Yeah. Was that over at the Humanity Hub?
Is that the one that's connected to the college?
No.
The student hotel?
No, I don't think so. The Humanity Hub is the one that Eric works out of. So that's why I was asking. I wasn't sure
cool.
if you were
no,
with
them. No, I don't think I was at the Humanity Hub. I was at it was like the student hotel or something.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to hear like what your experience was like while working. I mean, I know what mine's been like, where some days you're just like, oh yeah, this is easy and it's fine. And other days you just want to pack your laptop up after an hour of work and call it a day and go explore. So I'm curious as to your thoughts on that and what your experience was like.
Yeah, well, I'll talk about my experience, but I want to put it in context first. My job is such that I need to be in pretty much constant communication with my team. And I'm really supporting and coaching our sales team. We have 7 salespeople back here in the States. And then we have really 2 account managers, a director of operations and a developer. My job is such that I just really need to be in contact with them pretty often. So the thing that was most difficult for me was the time difference and trying to make sure that I was able to get calls into my team at a reasonable hour. Because I know for you right now, it's 5 o'clock at night, which would normally be a normal workday when you would be not working. But to accommodate me in Central Time, you did this phone call. So thank you for that. But I had a lot of that where I would actually take a break in the middle of the day and I would go do some fun stuff. And then I would open my laptop back up again at around 5 so that I could knock out some phone calls and some one-on-ones with my team in their time zone.
Yeah. So it kind of opens up the middle of your day a bit when you're, you know, 6-7 hours ahead. You just have to spend a few hours of your night taking calls, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. One of our customers is the United States Air Force. And when they were like, hey, you know, we need to have a call with you, I would never turn that call down. And I took their call. I think it was 11 o'clock at night.
Damn.
And I took it from my Airbnb.
That's awesome. I've been there before. The price you pay for work and travel on the road.
And it's totally worth it. It's totally worth it to pay that price.
I agree. I feel like if I didn't agree, I wouldn't still be doing it. Before we move on any further, can you just fill us in on what your job is, what your role is? So that way there's some context behind that.
Yeah, thank you. So my company is called Volunteer Local, and we are a volunteer scheduling and registration platform for events all over the world. So it was started here in Des Moines, Iowa. I opened up an office in Chicago and hired a few people there last year. So we have really 2 headquarters in Des Moines and Chicago, both in Central Time, of course. And my role, I started actually as an intern way back in 2012, and I grew from there. And today I'm the president of the company.
Damn. I didn't realize you started as an intern.
Startup story.
I don't know if that's a typical startup story, but all right, you got to tell me, how did you end up going from an intern to the president of Volunteer Local? I don't know that story.
Oh yeah. Well, it's a fun story. So I interned there after graduating from college, and the founding team, Brian Hemeseth, Jeff Wood, Brad Dwyer, and Jeremy Harrington, had applied for a grant, a $30,000 grant through IEDA, they got the grant, and the grant paid for my internship. And I remember when my internship was nearing an end, Brian sat me down and he said, Kaylee, I love working with you. I think you love the company. If you want to continue working here, you have to sell enough of the product to make the salary that you want. So I set the salary. He coached me on how to sell, and I started cold calling and cold emailing, and we sold enough that I was not only able to come on full-time myself, but we were able to hire another intern. She eventually became a full-time employee herself, and off we went. So we're a fully bootstrapped company, and I just kept growing and learning with Brian and with the team. And as the company grew, my responsibilities grew until eventually they were like, hey, you should probably change your title. So I went from intern to community builder to director of business development for 3 years until I finally became a president and a shareholder of the company.
That's a crazy story. I really had no idea. I was just like, oh yeah, no, Kaylee's president of Volunteer Local. I didn't know that you came from being an intern. And it sounds like you probably had a decent amount of challenges put in your way to get there as well.
Oh yeah. Well, like you were talking with travel, it's very up and down. I think there's some parallels to building a startup company where it really is a roller coaster, and the support network that you have is the support network that you build for yourself. And I like to tell people, I think we all build our lives and our careers to hold us. And so for me, what's carried me through this entire experience has been the incredible mentors that I've been fortunate enough to surround myself with, who are way smarter than me and have helped me to avoid making some really critical mistakes. And then when I did make other critical mistakes, they helped me to pick up the pieces and keep going forward.
Yeah, and having those types of people in your life, I feel like that's, like for me as well, really changed the trajectory, or however you pronounce that word, of my life, not just my career, but the decisions I've made and the path I've taken. I mean, I think about guys like Colin Wright or Peter Atwood, and just the example that they set for me so I could also do some of the same things that they are. It sounds like you've had those people in your life as well for business decisions. I mean, Brian as a sales guy, and I'm sure there's other people. And I feel like I would be doing a disservice if I didn't bring up Maureen.
Yeah.
So Maureen is Kaylee's mom. I've only met Maureen a few times, but she's a wonderful person. So I imagine she probably played a big role in that, in some of your success as well.
Incredible. She is my hero. I want to be her when I grow up. Luckily, I look a lot like her too. So my mom is from day one when I was 14 years old. I think she sensed that I had a little bit of an entrepreneurial spirit. I wanted to start making money. And so she said, why don't you start dog walking business? So I actually put out an ad in the paper, and she gave me, I think she gave me like $50 to put an ad in the paper with terms that I would pay her back. Like as I built up my little business, I'm doing air quotes over here. So I started walking 3 dogs a week. And I think it was like $5 per walk for each dog. And then I paid her back. And then of course I started making money doing the dog walking. And it was cool because she really helped me early on to develop a love for entrepreneurship. And then as an adult, it's just funny. The older we get, the more we look at our parents and we see that they're just such incredible people. And my mom has been absolutely a critical mentor for me and one of my best friends.
I'm thinking about that too. Like when you become an adult, when you can have that relationship with your parents and look back and be really grateful for everything that they've done for you. And I mean, it's an awesome story that she gave you the money and got you started on your first dog business. But I think that we all have those stories with our parents where you might not recognize what they're doing at that point in time, but when you get to be old enough to look back and appreciate it, it's an interesting feeling because you're like, oh, damn, I didn't realize what you were actually doing for me when you did it. And now I'm really happy you did.
Right. Even if in the moment you hated it. Like I remember I used to be in a children's choir and I wanted to quit halfway through. And our parents had one rule and it was no quitting. So we could join anything we wanted, but we had to see it through to the end. They wouldn't let me quit this children's choir and I did it all the way through. And then later in my life, I like from that developed a love for singing. And that's how I got involved with a band and toured. And now I have a couple albums out. And it's all because they wouldn't let me quit that children's choir when I was like, I don't even know, 9 or 10.
Wait. So you have a band and a couple albums out? Is that what you said?
Well, I used to be in a band and we have 2 albums out there. But yeah, I'm not in a band anymore.
Oh, man. I did not know you are full of all kinds of different surprises and talents. So,
I think life is just in chapters. And that was a really fun, cool chapter of my life. But I'm sure music will come back into my life at some point. But yeah,
that's cool. Do you want to tell us the name of the band so I can link to it in the show notes?
Sure. So the band goes by the name of the lead singer. His name is River Glenn.
Oh, I've heard of that before. Why have I heard of that?
Yeah, he's an Iowa native.
Oh, crazy. I did not know that you were part of that band.
Yep, for a long time.
That's awesome. I have to ask, I mean, you've done quite a bit. You've been part of Volunteer Local for almost, it's probably getting close to 10 years now. What, 8 or 9 years, something like that?
Yeah, it'll be 8 years in January.
Yeah, and I mean, you were part of this band, you released some albums, and you know, you just did a short stint in doing some like longer term travel. What kind of pushes you to keep trying all these different things or doing these different things, or I kind of want to call them experiments, like performing these experiments?
You know what? That's a really cool question. No one's ever asked me that before. I think it's just, for me, it's fun. I like learning new things, and I'll always be a lifelong learner. And Volunteer Local, the job has changed so much, and every day is different, and I'm still learning. You know, it's funny. We've gone through different iterations of salespeople. And one of those things I want to talk to you about today when we shift gears into talking more about business, but I get to experiment constantly in my job. And I think I like experimenting. I experiment in my life. Yeah, I don't know. I think for me, it's just fun. And it's really about learning and putting myself in a position where I can start at some point and not really know a whole lot. And I think it's fascinating how you can grow and get better and improve with time and with work, and you can become pretty good at something with enough time and practice.
Yeah. Do you have any tips or tricks that you use when you're picking up a new skill or trying to get better at something in a short period of time?
Ooh, yeah. Well, I kind of already mentioned mentors, but I'm going to say something really specific about mentorship, because you could walk down the street today and you could just say, hey, will you be my mentor to some random person? And like, cool, you have a mentor now. Congratulations. But that's not the point of a mentor, right? I think the best mentors are the ones that fill critical gaps in your current skill set. So if I wanted to get really good at something, I don't know, let's say that I wanted to get really good at marketing in my job. Well, I'm really not very good at marketing. So I would go and I would seek out somebody who's done marketing really well before. And I would first start by just asking them for a cup of coffee. And one of the beautiful things about Des Moines is that most people will have a cup of coffee with you. And it doesn't matter how busy they are. If they're the CEO of Principal, if you ask and you get the right introduction, you can probably have that cup of coffee. And if you hit it off and you feel like it could be a mutually beneficial relationship, at that point, I would just make the ask. And I would say, will you be a mentor for me? And usually it's, you know, we go through, what does that entail? Why should I be a mentor for you? Who are your other mentors who can speak to your ability to perform and execute against some of the goals that we set together? And I think all of that's a really appropriate conversation to have. And at the end of the day, you've got somebody in your corner who's really good at something that you're not really good at.
I think that's really important to think about too. Like you said, you can just walk down the street and ask anybody to be your mentor, get advice from anyone, but it's looking at maybe their track record, what they've been able to do in the past.
Exactly. And I try not to, this is a little bit unrelated, but I try not to take criticism too seriously from someone that I wouldn't take advice from. When my mentors criticize me, I take that to heart. But if I get, you know, criticism, or even if it's constructive from any other party, I take it with just like a little bit of a grain of salt.
Yeah, I think that's a really good lesson, though. They don't really have the experience, or I mean, they're not really a veteran in whatever you're trying to do. So for you to listen to their critique is almost to make them, you know, an advisor, take their advice. And I think it's important. This is a really important lesson for me to learn. And I think it's also, I mean, I'll double down on what you're saying. The people that you go to for advice, no matter what it is, whether it's professional or personal, whatever aspect, you know, look at what their track record has been, where they're at, and then think about if you like to achieve the same results or get to the same place before you spend a lot of time and consideration of their advice.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Trevor, has it been tough for you with all your traveling to stay in touch with mentors?
I haven't thought about that. So with some people, I have a really good answer for this, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. I would say that the people that I was the closest with and that I was already communicating with regularly on certain things, I have stayed or probably even gotten closer with as I've been traveling, because I'll send them a message or we'll jump on a phone call and we'll talk for maybe an hour every couple months. And so the people that I was already close with that were already close mentors, they've kind of stayed that way. And then others who were maybe I didn't have as close of a relationship with, or maybe I've evolved where I'm actually seeking out different types of advice or advice in different areas, I've kind of replaced them with people that I shouldn't say replaced. I found other mentors along the way. Because I mean, there's people all over the world who have skills in a lot of different areas. One thing I'm doing right now is actively trying to find people who have been able to stay really healthy on the road, whether that's exercising every day and, you know, getting a run in, working out, eating healthy, because that's something I know that I've struggled with a bit at times. I'm doing better now, but I'm always trying to find someone. I'm like, okay, so you've been working and traveling, and somehow you've looked like you could be in the Avengers movie. How do you do it? So I would say that it's just like, there's different seasons for everything. Some of the mentors I had before, I'm not really looking to change or improve that skill set right now. I'm working in different areas, so I've picked up other mentors on the way. One other quick point is some of the mentors that I have, I've never met these people. I've just read their books. I follow their stuff online. So I would say that sometimes it's just, you know, looking at where you get your information from. Are you reading just some random person's blog or YouTube video, or are you going out and finding whoever's the best in the industry and reading their material about that specific topic?
Yeah, I'll add to what you're saying that you can outgrow a mentor. And I think that you can lean into new mentors, and you should, there should be mentor churn happening. I've been with Volunteer Local, like you said, for almost 8 years, and my mentors from the beginning, there are a few that have been like really core to my growth and are still with me today, but a few that I've had to shed. And I have new mentors today that are just, the business is in a totally different place and I need totally different things. So being self-aware and knowing what you need as you grow. And I like that you said there are seasons for everything, you know, it doesn't always have to be business. It can be about wellness or balance or stress. You know, you can have mentors for any part of your life.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Because I can think about when, you know, years ago when I was getting into a lot of the stuff that's like learning how to do online marketing and sales and all that. When I was developing those skills, almost all of my mentors were in that area. Mm-hmm. And now it's, I feel like I've gotten to the point where, you know, if I was hitting them up regularly, they'd probably be like, why don't you just go, like, you already know what to do.
You got it, kiddo, run.
Yeah, they're like, why are you talking to me? Like, you already know what to do, just go do it. So I think that there comes a point in time where maybe you're not getting mentored as much in a specific area, but maybe people are starting to reach out to you for advice too. So I almost feel like that's an important part of like the mentorship cycle, is when people come to you for advice, taking the time to remember that people helped you get there. And if you can help someone else and they, I mean, I wouldn't recommend helping every single person, but helping those that are already helping themselves.
Yep. You get what you give. And I think that's true of most things in life.
Yeah. All right, Kaylee. So you've had a lot of success at Volunteer Local. And I mean, clearly you've had success in other areas of your life that I didn't really realize that you were such an accomplished musician. That's pretty awesome. If you could share maybe a few of the lessons that you learned along the way while you were, you know, going from intern to president of the company and then even growing the company from there. Because I feel like the first time that we met, the company wasn't quite as big as it is now. And there's probably been some different challenges and things that have come up along the way that weren't quite the same as back then.
Yeah, well, if I could go back, if I had a time machine, Trevor, I would get from where I was when we met to where I am today in a year. It would not have taken me 5 years to get here. So here are the biggest takeaways of the lessons that I could share with anyone who's interested in building a business or currently working for a startup or really on any initiative that they want to see succeed. So what I've learned first and foremost is the importance of telling your story and telling it well. And I think this loops into sales, learning how to sell your product or your service in a way that solves a real problem for the person on the other end of the line. Once I wrapped my mind around this idea that selling is problem solving, it energized me. I felt like, okay, you know, I can really do this. And I didn't feel like a typical salesman, like going out and calling people up or getting them on the phone for a demo, because I knew at the end of the day, after our call was done, they were going to be happy with the product and it was either going to solve their problem or it wasn't. And if it wasn't, then fine, that happens. You get no's all the time. But when it did and when it worked, it was very cool. Learning how to sell your product is so important. And then for me, learning how to let go. We tried a few different models when it came to hiring salespeople. I got really good at selling the product and I tried to hire full-time employees in a very traditional model where I would train them on how to give a demo. And then I would oversee every account that they demoed. And then we would follow that lead through to close. We knew our ratios, so we knew what that individual was shooting for. And time again, that model failed. Either the salesperson got burnt out or they weren't motivated. They weren't feeling the vision. They weren't inspired. They weren't drinking the Kool-Aid, or it was just too hard. You know, cold calling is hard. Cold emailing is really hard. So we tried a different model. And I had to learn to let go. I hired 10 people all at once to do contract sales for Volunteer Local. And what we decided to do, instead of paying them a base salary plus commission for deals, we decided instead to incentivize the activities that led to sales. So I pay them per demo. And just like Uber, they claim a demo on their smartphone. So when a demo request comes through, whoever gets it first gets the demo. The customer picks the time and day, and then they give the demo, and then they do the follow-up activities, and I pay them commission if the deal actually closes. So that model has been I want to say a runaway success for our product. And I think it's very 2019. It's contract employees, 1099. They're paid as they go. They're paid for the work they're doing and not the outcome of the work they're doing. So, I mean, so far so good. And our sales have really reflected that.
That's a really good idea. I had never really thought about it like that. I feel like I've heard another company doing this, but I'm not sure who it would have been. Did you guys build the software to support this?
The software that we use to push the demos out to our demo team, that's what we call them, is Volunteer Local. We just retrofitted our own product. We drank our own Kool-Aid and we built out a basically like a portal that they could use Volunteer Local to claim the demo they want at the time they want it. And then they would get the calendar invite for that particular demo.
That is brilliant. Have you guys thought about selling that or are you selling that?
No, we have though. I gave it some real thought. But you know, one thing, this ties in nicely. It's a good question. One thing that I think is important, especially when you're scaling a business, is to stay focused. Stay focused on what you know you can sell, the product out of the box today. Don't get too derailed with different markets or different iterations of your product, your core product.
That's something I struggle with a little bit, but I'm working on getting better. It's so easy to try to be everything for everyone or get distracted by the shiny thing when, I mean, I'm saying this mostly to myself right now, but staying focused on what got you here.
Yeah, that's right. Even if it's a huge customer, you know, we've courted some really, really big accounts that definitely would have been a fun PR splash for Des Moines and for Volunteer Local if we had landed it. But the person that, you know, we were dealing with on the other end wanted all these customizations and we had to really look at it and say, do we want to hunt down this whale? Will it take our little business, our little rowboat down under the ocean? So I think it's important to stay focused on what you know you can do well, even if it means not getting the huge account or tapping into the huge market opportunity that got you excited.
I feel like I just read something the other day where somebody put something out about, you know, a lot of those deals with these huge companies usually are nothing more than just like huge PR splash and a big pain for these companies. So it's interesting to hear that you had those and, you know, you turned those down.
Mm-hmm. Not all of them, unfortunately.
Not all of them.
But a couple big.
You learn.
Yeah.
Okay. So you said the last topic that you touched on was staying focused. What else would you say has been a key to you and your team's success at Volunteer Local?
Well, it's great that you mentioned the team because it really is about the team. You know, a quick note on hiring. If you feel in your gut like it's not the right fit at the interview or after you've hired the individual at any point, the thing that I've learned is that it's best to just let that person go. I've had full-time employees that I kept on for much too long that I really should have let go right away when we saw those issues pop up, whether it was related to their performance or, you know, a cultural fit with the team. You are only, and your company is only as strong as the people around you, their skill set, their passion. And really, I think the right combination of people and personalities can catapult your growth. Whereas, you know, even just one naysayer, somebody pushing in the wrong direction can deter that growth significantly.
I think that's such a good point because that's been a difficult lesson that I've had to learn as well. Because I don't know about you, but I very easily like care about my team or my coworkers, employees, whoever these people are, and I want to see them do well. So when I decide to bring someone on, I'm usually like, I'm probably their biggest fan. Not only, you know, they are helping me grow whatever business it is that I'm working on or whatever project it is, but it's also because, you know, I generally like people and I want them to do well. So when that gut feeling kind of comes up, we're like, oh man, this is not going well. I think that's been a difficult lesson for me to learn as well. When that feeling comes up, you either need to address it and figure out if it's a real problem or it's already a big enough problem that you have noticed it and you need to do something about it.
Well, yeah. And I don't know if you found this to be the case as well, but it's not always the person. Sometimes it's just the format or the structure of the role. So, you know, I talked about hiring those full-time salespeople. I had to let every single one of them go. And it's never, ever easy to fire someone. Even if you know it's the right thing, it's so difficult to do. And what I found when we switched to this new model, where instead of hiring a full-time 40-hour-a-week salesperson, we were going to hire 10 people to do demos like on a rolling basis, on a contract basis, it was so successful. And what I realized is that it really wasn't the people that weren't the fit. It was the way that I had structured the position. So I think that there's room for some introspection. And there's room for looking at the way you've structured the role to see if perhaps a small change in how they're compensated or how you've set up the position might make a difference.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, is sometimes it's not always the person, it just could be the fit. And yeah, it's not always an easy choice to move on for someone or to, you know, move things around, but it's, you know, sometimes it's what has to be done, I guess.
Yeah, yep.
I'm just thinking about a few moments where I've, you know, whether by my fault for not having the correct process in place or something where I've had to let someone go, whether it was like a full-time person or a freelancer.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, damn. And I look back, I'm like, is there any way I could have fixed this? What could I have done? What did I have control over? And try to always look at my process and our process first versus just being like, well, they just sucked, you know,
yeah,
and they had
absolutely.
To go.
Fall on your sword. Absolutely. I think so much of what is challenging and also exhilarating about building a company is that you are making all the rules. And you are setting up the jobs and the expectations and the touch points and the structure or lack thereof of how their performance is measured. So I actually wrote a blog post about this, or no, I wrote an article in the Des Moines Register about this a long time ago. I think that there are some corporate structures that do work. Like, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. This is going to sound kind of silly, but don't be afraid to Google it. Maybe my advice too is, like, if you don't know how to set up a sales position, just Google it. How do you set up a sales position? Like, what does a job description look like? You know, what is a COO? Like, you can Google it and you're going to get a wealth of knowledge from established companies, often, you know, large corporations that have a ton of structure in place. And there's nothing wrong with applying a little bit of that structure to your startup.
I think that's such good advice, that just by taking the time to do the research from other people, I didn't see your article, but I would probably enjoy reading it. But just doing the homework and seeing how other people have done it is a great way to take a look at your own organization or your processes and fill in those gaps.
Yep.
I'm talking about this from how I run my organization, though, which is also from like mostly a freelancer based organization. And so not quite as big as yours. So just to be clear, I'm not comparing my little freelance team.
I don't know. I think there's a lot of parallels when you're dealing with employees, whether they're contract or part-time or full-time. I think there's some isms that remain true no matter what.
Yeah, that's probably accurate, I would say. Okay, so talked a bit about, you know, what you've learned growing Volunteer Local and where you're at today. I'm assuming that you get approached by a lot of people for advice on, you know, whether it's, I'm sure you get asked, like, how do I raise money for my startup? Or like, how do I get started? All these different questions that are, you know, passed around the startup world a lot. What do you tell someone that comes up to you and says that they have an idea and they want to get started on it?
I would say go to your potential customers first and ask them if they want it, if it solves their problem, if it's a real problem that other people have, and if they're willing to buy it. And if you're going to bootstrap, I would recommend that you try to get their money in advance so that you can build up kind of a hot list of people who will be notified when your MVP or your minimum viable product rolls out. And then you have a little bit of cash flow that you have like to start with so that you can build it out. It really helps if you have a really good developer and if it's a software product, of course. I've been very fortunate to work with Brian Hemeseth, who is an incredible developer. Although I don't think he would call himself that. I think he calls himself a cowboy coder because he learned how to do it pretty much on his own. But yeah, I mean, if you have an idea and you really believe in it, get buy-in from people who you think will be your customers before you invest any money into it.
Yeah, or time as well.
Or time.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that if you bootstrap, you should do that. What about if you're raising money? Is that also an approach you would take, or would you not ask for anything up front if you were planning on going the venture funding route? Or I guess it'd probably be more like friends and family than angel route.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I will tell you, I'll just be very transparent. I've not ever raised money for Volunteer Local, so I don't have a ton of experience in that realm. However, I do hear from others around me that it's very different in the Midwest than it is on either coast. So here, we're very risk averse. Investors expect your company to be pretty much established and hopefully cash flow positive before they're willing to even put money, you know, into it. So I don't know if something at the idea stage could get a lot of traction in the Midwest. That's not to say that you couldn't. I just think it might be a little more difficult than if you were to go out to the coast where they're less risk averse and they're more willing to throw money at an idea to see what happens. So, you know, charisma and learning to tell your story certainly goes a long way. Having actual people who are willing to put down actual money to solve the problem that they're actually having, I think, is the other half of that puzzle.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've only done very little in the fundraising world, so I'm also very hesitant to give much advice there.
Right.
The only things that I usually share about it are what worked for us when we were doing it. And that was kind of like you said, going to your customers, getting their buy-in first, getting them to put a little skin in the game before you actually build anything. Because I've been on the other side where you spend months or however long trying to get something done. Mm-hmm. And then you find out that no one actually wants it or cares. And
they don't want it or care. Yeah, you know, I will tell you, Trevor, I for a minute there wanted to raise money. It was a couple of years ago. And I remember Brian and Brad Dwyer is another shareholder and early investor in Volunteer Local early on. They both said to me, okay, cool, how would you spend the money? And I didn't know. I actually did not have a plan for how I would spend the money. I was just sort of like, well, you know, I would hire another salesperson or I would do more marketing. And you have to be really specific about how you're going to spend that money. And ideally, you could prove that you've already spent a little money doing it and it worked. So if you could prove that you just take those investment dollars and plug it into an engine that you've already built and it's going to spin out more profit at the end of the day or even just top line revenue, I think that's really compelling and can definitely help.
Yeah, absolutely. I think having a path to where you're going, or knowing where you're going to spend the money and also being able to give an example of what that return would be is probably...
Yeah, the basics, some might say.
What else do you have to say, or what other pieces of advice do you have for, you know, those early stage founders that you were in their shoes not that long ago? So what advice would you give Kaylee 6 years ago?
You know, I will say this, and you touched on it a little bit earlier in our call about wellness. And I think let's walk down a path here. Let's pretend you've got an idea and you went out and you found people who love your idea and think that it could solve a real problem. And maybe they gave you a little money. And so you have some traction. You're building out your product. Maybe you're actively selling it now. It is so easy at this point in your business to let go of your emotional well-being, to let go of your physical well-being, you know, to eat poorly, to stay up late, drink Red Bulls at 11 o'clock at night and power through to build out your new feature. And I think for me, it took me a long time to get here, but you have to be willing to prioritize your personal wellness just as much as you prioritize the wellness of your business. Because at the end of the day, your business, your idea cannot be successful if you are not firing off 100% on all pistons. So like this morning, we had our call at 10 a.m. I went to the Y at 8 a.m. and I swam a bunch of laps. And now I'm here. So I started my day a little late. I missed a couple of work calls while I was swimming. That's okay. They both emailed me and I'm going to get back to them today. But I've learned that it's okay to erode even into my normal working hours to make sure that I am well physically and emotionally and feeling grounded.
I think that is something that so many people forget. And I am extremely guilty of being on the opposite end of it where I just burn myself out.
Oh, me too. Me too.
I essentially have put my like physical and mental health first. And even if that means, you know, there's been some clients I've had to part ways with where, because I was just like, all right, you're not respecting my boundaries. Like I have this box of time that I'm available. And my team is available. And if it's outside that box, like you have to wait. I'm not on demand. I'm not a robot. So it's just being willing to like draw those lines and then stick to them. I think it's easy when you are kind of fantasizing about building the next big startup and having that huge exit. And you're like, yeah, I'm going to stay up all night and drink Red Bulls, like you said. But it's really a marathon, you know, like it's not going to happen overnight. Not because you stayed awake, you know, you didn't sleep for a few weeks. You have years of work ahead of you. So yeah. You kind of have to make sure that you're able to keep going at a pretty consistent pace.
I'm so glad you said that. I think I've said this for a while now, but good things take time. There's this sort of mantra around the startup community that you start and you scale and then you pop, you know, and you sell, you exit. And it all happens, you know, within a matter of a few years. And with Volunteer Local, I mean, I've been doing this, we've talked about for almost a decade, and we have seen steady, consistent, promising growth year over year over year, even when things were really hard, even when I had to let go of full-time employees, you know, back to back, like we have continued to see that kind of steady growth. And so it does take time. And if you know going into it that you're committed to the product, you're committed to the company, and you're in it for the long haul, then it's worth it to make sure that you have a great balance between your personal life.
I couldn't have said that any better. That balance is so important. Like, let's look at a scenario where you work so hard, you basically sacrifice your personal life and your personal health. And, you know, 5 to 10 years from now, you wake up and, you know, you sold your company. But now all the reasons why you started in the first place, most of the people that were in your life before probably aren't going to be there still because they haven't seen you. And it's like, was that all worth it?
I mean, for some people it might be, I don't know. But, and I think part of it too, you know, Trevor, it's like you wake up 5 years and maybe you've sold your company and you're like, okay, was it worth it? But I think maybe the bigger question that I would want to know is, did you have fun? If you're not having fun, let's say that you land the Air Force Marathon and you're building out a new feature for them. They're a huge client. It's 11 o'clock at night. You're going to drink that Red Bull. You're going to code through. But are you having fun? Like, are you doing it? Because heck yes, like you are your own boss. You are building something meaningful. You're changing the world. Are you still having fun? And I think if you're not having fun and you're just working your tail off, then I think when you start to get into a place where you're just not performing well and you're not happy, and it shows when you talk to customers, even, it will come through.
Yeah, that's such another good point. I feel like we're definitely on the same page with this stuff. If you're not taking care of yourself and you're not in a good place personally, unless you're just a really, really good actor, it's going to be really tough to go to work and be excited about whatever it is that you're doing.
Right. So I think for people who are listening, here are my things that I do to stay happy and healthy. Here's just like what I work on. So I love that you said that you run when you get to a new city, you run through it. I'm a big runner too. So I try to run 3 times a week at least. And I find trails outside that are like just really great to run on. So my favorite one when I was abroad was in Zurich. I ran around Lake Zurich, not all the way around. It's a huge lake, but I went like, you know, down a portion of it and back. So anytime you can go running or do anything that's outside, even if it's just yoga or something to make you feel good and grounded and your feet are actually on the soil, I think that's really helpful. I try to eat well. So I try to plan out the meals that I'm going to have on Sunday night, because I think when I don't eat well, it's when I haven't prepared. And it's just easy in that moment to go out to eat and be like, well, I don't have lunch today. I'm just going to go out to eat. So try to plan your meals. And then I've gotten into meditation. I have an app on my phone that I use, and I try to just before bed, I put my phone in a different room. But before I go into like bed, I'll actually do like a little meditation with my phone. And that's been great for me to just sort of clear my head and get into a space where I'm ready to sleep.
Yeah. Oh man, I cannot imagine what my life would be like if I didn't do meditation or yoga regularly, just to take time away from my phone.
Yeah.
It's so important and it's so impactful. And I appreciate you sharing your healthy travel habits. Man, I feel like we've talked about a ton of stuff, and I want to be respectful of your time. So I think we can probably wrap it up here soon. I have like one, maybe two more questions. We'll see if you answer them in one go. So you've done all this stuff, you know, your latest experiment was the travel one. You know, you're still with Volunteer Local. What's next?
Ooh, that's a fun question. I think, well, top of mind right now, I just bought my second home in Des Moines. So I'm excited for that. And I close in June. And I think I love to travel, but I also love to have a home base. So a place that I can always come back to. Oh gosh, Trevor, I don't know if I have a good answer for that. I feel like things just sort of hit me and like fall in my lap. And then it's kind of an impulsive, like, I want to travel, or I want to learn how to brew my own beer, or I want to do a triathlon. Like, you know, it's just, I get these like whims and I want to go after it. So I'm not sure yet what's next. I think more travel for sure is in my future. It's just been so invigorating to go abroad and meet new people and expand my worldview, and then come back and take some of that and apply it to my life here in Des Moines and with my family and with my work. So travel for sure.
As you're saying that, I'm like, yeah, that's kind of what I do as well. If something pops up, you know, I'm like, is this something I want to do? And I'm like, yeah, let's go. And then I kind of forget about everything else. When the right things pop up, it's a great thing, but it's like a double-edged sword, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right, last question, and then we can wrap it up. We talked a lot at the beginning about your experiences traveling, and, you know, you mentioned just a second ago that, you know, you'd like to do more travel in the future. For those that are, you know, sitting at an office or a co-working space, and, you know, maybe they pull up Nomadlist or some website, and they're like, how can I possibly do this? What advice would you give to those people about, you know, just taking that next step and taking their laptop with them and getting on a plane and going somewhere for like a week or a month and giving like that remote lifestyle a shot?
Yeah, you know, I could throw a whole bunch of like fluffy feel good at you, but I'm going to tell you really honestly what got me to make the trip happen. I found a really cheap flight. Like one that I could buy impulsively in that moment. It was $150 one way to London through Norwegian Air. And that was all that I needed. I was close enough mentally that I knew I wanted to make this trip happen. But when I found that flight, I just was like, I'm going to do this. And I bought it right there. So what I would recommend is, if you can work remotely, of course, you're in a good position and you can definitely travel if that's what you want to do. So I'm going to give my response to this is going to be a tip on how to get really cheap flights.
Okay, awesome. I'm all ears. I'm taking notes.
Yeah. Okay. So this is what I have learned. I'll give you a couple. One, obviously most people know this, but I just got to throw it out there. Go incognito in your browser when you're pulling up Google Flights. Two, look up one-way flights. Oftentimes it's cheaper to buy a one-way going there and a one-way coming back than to buy the round-trip ticket. 3, find a city that you can get to your final destination relatively cheaply. So I'm going to give you an example. I'm going to Mallorca, which is an island off of Spain, on June 4th. And round-trip flights from New York City to Mallorca are only $450. But a round-trip flight from Des Moines to Mallorca is $1,200. So what I did was I booked the round-trip flight from New York City to Mallorca for $450. And then I bought myself a one-way flight to New York for $175. And a one-way flight from New York back to Des Moines for another $175. So the whole thing is like under, I think, $700. And I basically got 50% less than what I would have paid if I would have done round trip from Des Moines to Mallorca.
Yeah, that makes total sense. That's a really good tip. I've experimented a little bit with that, but I haven't had a ton of success. So I'm excited to hear that you did. So now I'm like brainstorming how I can right. use this next time around.
Okay. But I'm going to give you one more. And this one's a little bit... it's not very honest, but I'm going to throw it out there. A lot of people gripe about the cost of flying from Des Moines to Chicago because they're really expensive. Flights from Des Moines to Chicago are easily $400, but a flight from Des Moines to Philadelphia is usually under $200, sometimes under $100. So oftentimes you can't fly direct from Des Moines to Philly, but you'll connect in Chicago. So if you book a flight from Des Moines to Philadelphia with a connection in Chicago and you don't check a bag, you can get off at Chicago and you've essentially paid, you know, $150 to get to Chicago. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. I feel dirty now, but
I know.
That's a good one too, because I've maybe have done something like that before, but that was in Europe. But so it's fine. All's fair.
So, and I'll let you decide whether or not you want to air that one. But I think that if you're just creative and you try to come up with different approaches, you can book a really cheap flight. And I think it just for a lot of people, it's a cost barrier to go abroad. And if you can bring those costs down, I think people are more likely to do it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, Kaylee, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. Anything you'd like to leave the audience with before we sign off?
I'll just say what one of my mentors and my co-founder, Brian, likes to say to me all the time, which is enjoy the ride. Have fun.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap for this week's show. Big thank you to Kaylee for coming on and having a quick chat with me about, you know, all of her crazy life experiences. And, you know, I learned a few things about her as well. Now, if I could ask you a quick favor, if you have a few minutes, go ahead and open up your podcast application, whether that's on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, whatever it is, and give us a quick review. By you giving us a review, it helps us to rise up in the charts and help people like you find our show. So if you can give us a hand and give us a review, that would be awesome. Let me know what you think. And, you know, if there's any ways that you'd like us to improve the show, you can drop me an email, trevor@formulapodcast.com. Now that's a wrap for this week's show, and I look forward to you tuning in next time.